The closer they drew to Karnak, the slower their progress became, impeded by the joyous population. Finally, royal messengers arrived, riding hard upriver from Pharaoh's palace. They carried orders to the commander of the flotilla to make all haste and present himself at the court of Karnak forthwith. "Nefer-Seti, your grandson, was never a patient boy," Taita told Fenn, who laughed excitedly. "How I long to see him! I am delighted that he has ordered Meron to hasten. How old will Nefer-Seti be now?" "Oh, perhaps 54 years, and Mintaka, his queen and principal wife, is not much younger. It'll be interesting to see what you make of her, for in character she is much like you, wild and headstrong. When aroused, she is almost as ferocious as you are." "I am not sure if you mean that as a compliment to us, or an insult," Fenn responded. "But of one thing I am certain, I shall like her, this mother of my great-grandchildren. I divine that she is in turmoil. She is still held in the coils of Eos and her false prophet Soe. Although Eos is destroyed and her powers dissipated, Soe still has her in his clutches. To set her free will be our last sacred duty. After that, you and I will pursue our own dreams." So they came to Karnak, that city of 100 gates and countless splendours, all of which had been restored by the returning waters. The crowds there were denser and more boisterous than any they had met so far. They poured through the city gates, and the sound of drums, horns, and shouting made the air throb. On the royal wharf stood a welcoming committee of priests, nobles, and army generals, clad in their robes of office and accompanied by entourages who were almost as splendidly attired. As soon as Meron and Tinat stepped ashore, the horns blew a ringing fanfare, and a great shout of acclaim went up from the multitudes. The Grand Vizier led them to the pair of splendid chariots that stood ready for them. Both vehicles were covered with gold leaf and precious stones, so that they sparkled and shone in the bright sunlight. They were drawn by perfectly matched teams of horses from Pharaoh's own stables, one milky white, the other ebony black. Meron and Tinat sprang up onto the footplates and whipped up the teams. They drove wheel to wheel in the royal way between the ranks of the stone sphinxes, two heroic figures in their warlike armour and accoutrement. An escort of mounted cavalry preceded them, and a company of the royal guard ran behind. The voice of the crowd burst over them like a tempest. Far behind, Taita and Fenn followed in their disguise, making their way on foot through the surging, shifting throng until they reached the palace gates. Here they paused, joined hands, and shrouded themselves in the spell of concealment to pass between the palace guards into the great royal audience hall. They stood aloof from the dense press of courtiers and dignitaries that filled the space. On the raised dais at the far end, Pharaoh Nefer-Seti and his queen sat side by side on their ivory thrones. Pharaoh wore the blue war crown, Kepresh. It was a tall headdress, with flanged side pieces adorned with discs of pure gold, and on the brow of the helmet, the uraeus, the entwined heads of the cobra and the vulture, the symbols of the upper and lower kingdoms. Pharaoh wore no cosmetics, and his torso was bare, showing the scars of 50 battles, but the muscles of his chest and arms were still sleek and hard. Taita examined his aura and saw that it was brave in endeavour and steadfast in duty. Beside him, Queen Mentaka also wore the uraeus, but her hair was streaked with silver, and her features were etched with the marks of mourning and sorrow for her children. Her aura was confused and forlorn, riven by doubt and guilt. Her misery was deep and desolate. Before the royal thrones, Colonel Meron Cambyses and Colonel Tinat Ankut were spread-eagled face down in loyal obeisance. Pharaoh rose to his feet and lifted one hand. A deep hush fell over the assembly. When he spoke, his voice echoed among the tall sandstone pillars that rose from their plinths to the high painted ceiling. "Be it known through both of my kingdoms and throughout all my foreign dominions that Meron Cambyses and Tinat Ankut have found great favour in my eyes." He paused, and his grand vizier, Tentek, knelt before him and offered a silver tray on which lay a scroll of papyrus. Pharaoh took and unrolled it. He read from the parchment in a ringing voice, "By these presents, let all men know that I have elevated Lord Tinnat-Ankut to the nobility, and donated to his dignity one river unit of fertile land along the banks of the Nile below Esna." The river unit comprised 10 square leagues, an enormous extent of arable land. In one stroke, Tinnat had become a wealthy man. But there was more. Nefertiti went on, "From henceforth, Lord Tinnat-Ankut shall be ranked a field general in my army of the Upper Kingdom. He shall have command of the Fat Legion. All this by my grace and magnanimity." "Pharaoh is merciful," shouted the congregation in one voice. "Arise, Lord Tinnat-Ankut, and embrace me." Tinnat stood to kiss Pharaoh's bare right shoulder, and Nefertiti placed the deeds to his new estate in his right hand. Then he turned to Merin, who still lay prostrate before him. Tentek offered him a second silver tray. Pharaoh took from it another scroll and displayed it to the gathering. "By these presents, let all men know that I have elevated Lord Merin Cambyses to the nobility, and donated to his dignity 3 river units of fertile land along the banks of the Nile above Assuit. From henceforth, Lord Merin shall be ranked Marshal General of the Army of the Lower Kingdom. Furthermore, I bestow upon him, as a mark of my special favour, the gold of praise and the gold of valour. Arise, Lord Merin." When Merin stood before him, Pharaoh placed the heavy gold chains of praise and valour over his shoulders. "Embrace me, Lord Marshal Merin Cambyses," he said, and kissed Merin's cheek. With his lips close to Pharaoh's ear, Merin whispered urgently, "I have news of Taita, which is for your ears only." Pharaoh's grip on Merin's shoulder tightened momentarily, and he replied softly, "Tentek will bring you to my presence directly." While the entire assembly prostrated themselves, Pharaoh took his queen by the hand and led her from the hall. They passed only a few paces from where Taita and Fen stood unseen. Merin waited until Tentek reappeared and spoke quietly to him. "Pharaoh bids you to his presence. Follow me, my Lord Marshal." As Merin passed, Taita took Fen's hand and they fell in behind him. Tentek ushered Merin into the royal presence, but when Merin would have made another obeisance, Nefertiti came to him and embraced him warmly. "My dear friend and companion of the Red Road, it is so good to have you back. I only wish you had brought with you the Magus. His death has struck me to the heart." Then he held Merin at arm's length and gazed into his face. "You were never good at concealing your emotions. What is it that disturbs you now, tell me?" "Your eyes are as sharp as ever. They miss nothing." "I have tidings that I shall relate to you," Merin replied. "But before I do, I must caution you to prepare yourself for a great shock. What I have to tell you is so strange and wonderful that when I was first presented with it, my mind could not encompass it." "Come now, my lord." Nefertiti smote him a blow between the shoulder blades and made him stagger. "Speak!" Merin drew a deep breath and blurted out, "Taita lives." Nefertiti stopped laughing and stared at him in astonishment. Then his features darkened in a scowl. "Jest with me at your peril, my Lord Marshal," he said coldly. "I speak the truth, mighty King of Kings." In this mood, Nefertiti struck terror into the bravest heart. "If this is the truth, and for the good of your soul, Merin Cambyses, it had better be, then tell me where Taita is now." "One more thing I must tell you, O majestic and magnanimous one. Taita is much altered in appearance. You may not recognize him at first." "Enough!" Nefertiti's voice rose. "Tell me where he is." "In this very chamber," Merin's voice cracked, "standing close to us." And then under his breath he added, "At least I hope he is." Nefertiti placed his right hand on the hilt of his dagger. "You trespass on my good nature, Merin Cambyses." Merin looked wildly around the empty chamber, and his voice was pitiful as he spoke to the empty air. "Magus, O mighty Magus, reveal yourself, I beseech you. I stand in peril of Pharaoh's wrath. Then he let out a cry of relief. Behold, Majesty! He pointed across the room to a tall statue carved from black granite. That is the statue of Taita carved by the master sculptor Osh, Nefertiti said in fury. I keep it here to remind me of the Magus, but it is only stone, not my beloved Taita in the flesh. Nay, Pharaoh, look not at the statue, but to its right-hand side. Where Meron pointed, a shimmering and transparent cloud appeared, like a desert mirage. Pharaoh blinked as he stared at it. There is aught there. It is light as air. Is it a jinni? A ghost? The mirage became denser and slowly took solid shape. It is a man, Nefertiti exclaimed. A veritable man. He stared in astonishment. But it is not Taita. This is a youth, a comely youth, not my Taita. Surely he must be a magician that he is able to mask himself in a spell of concealment. It is magic, Meron agreed, but of the whitest and noblest kind, a magic wrought by Taita himself. This is Taita. Nay, Nefertiti shook his head. I know not this person. If he is indeed a living person. Your Grace, this is the Magus made young and whole again. Even Nefertiti was speechless. All he could do was shake his head. Taita stood quietly smiling at him, a warm, loving smile. Look to the statue, Meron pleaded. Osh carved it when the Magus was already an old man, but even now that he is young again the resemblance is unmistakable. Look to the depth and width of the brow, the shape of the nose and the ears, but above all, look to the eyes. Yes, perhaps I can see some resemblance, Nefertiti murmured dubiously. Then his tone became firm and challenging. Oh, Phantom! If you are indeed Taita, you must be able to tell me something known only to the two of us. That is so, Pharaoh, Taita agreed. I could tell you many such things, but one comes instantly to my mind. Do you remember when you were still Prince Nefer-Memnon and not Pharaoh of the two kingdoms? When you were my student and ward, and my pet name for you was Mem? Pharaoh nodded. I remember well. His voice had dropped to a husky whisper, and his gaze softened. But many others could have known such a thing. I can tell you more, Mem. I can tell you how when you were a boy we set pigeon decoys beside the pool of Gebel Nagara in the wilderness and waited 20 days for the royal falcon, your godbird, to come to them. My godbird never came to the decoys, said Nefertiti, and Taita saw by the flickering of his aura that he was laying a trap to test him. Your falcon came, Taita contradicted him. The lovely falcon that was proof of your royal right to the double crown of Egypt. We captured him, Nefertiti said triumphantly. Nay, Mem, the falcon refused the decoy and flew away. We abandoned the hunt. Nay, again, Mem, your memory fails you. We followed the bird deeper into the wilderness. Ah, yes, to the bitter lake Natron. Nay, yet again. You and I went to the mountain of Bir Ammazara. While I held you on the rope, you climbed the falcon's eyrie high in the eastern face of the mountain to take down the chicks. By now Nefertiti was staring at him with bright eyes. When you reached the nest, you found that the cobra had been there before you. The birds were dead, killed by the venomous bite of the serpent. Oh, Magus, none but you could have known these things. Forgive me for not acknowledging you. All my life you were my guide and mentor, and now I have denied you. Nefertiti was stricken with remorse. He strode across the room and enfolded Taita in his powerful arms. When at last they drew apart, he could not take his eyes off Taita's face. The transformation in you defies my powers of comprehension. Tell me how this came about. There is much to tell, Taita agreed. But before that there are other matters we needs must deal with. First there is somebody I would present to you. Taita held out his hand, and once again the air shimmered, then solidified into the shape of a young woman. She also smiled at Nefertiti. "As you have done so often before, you confound me with your magic," Nefertiti said. "Who is this creature? Why have you brought her to me?" "Her name is Fen, and she is an adept of the right-hand path." "She is too young for that." "She has lived other lives. She is surpassing beautiful." He looked at her with the eye of a lusty man. "Yet there is something hauntingly familiar about her. Her eyes... I know those eyes." He searched for the memory. "They remind me of someone I once knew well. Pharaoh, Fen is my consort." "Your consort? How can that be? You are a..." He checked his tongue. "Forgive me, Magus. I intended no slight nor injury to your dignity. It is true, Pharaoh, that I was once a eunuch, but now I am a man whole and complete. Fen is my woman." "So much has changed," Nefertiti protested. "No sooner do I solve one riddle than you present me with another." He broke off, still staring at Fen. "Those eyes, those green eyes, my father. Those are the eyes of my father. Is it possible that Fen is of my own royal blood?" "Come, Mem," Taita chided him gently. "First you complain of the mysteries I lay before you, and then you demand I heap more upon you. Let me tell you simply that Fen stands in your direct line. Your blood is her blood, but far back in time." "You said that she has lived other lives. Was it in one of those other lives?" "Even so," Taita agreed. "Explain it to me," Pharaoh commanded. "Later we will have time for that. However, you in Egypt are still under threat. You already know of the witch Eos, who stopped the waters of Mother Nile. Is it true that you destroyed her in her lair?" "The witch is no more, but one of her minions is still at large. His name is Soe. He is a dangerous man." "Soe? I know of a man by that name. Mintaka spoke of him. He is a preacher, the apostle of a new goddess. Spelt backwards, his name is Eos. His goddess was the sorceress. His purpose was to destroy you and your bloodline and to usurp the double throne of Egypt for the witch." Nefertiti's expression was horror-struck. "This Soe had the ear of Mintaka, my principal wife. She believes in him. He converted her to his new religion." "Why did you not intervene?" "I humoured her. Mintaka was demented with grief for our dead babies. Soe gave her comfort. I saw no harm in it." "There was great harm in it," Taita said. "Harm to you and to Egypt. Soe is still a terrible threat. He is the last adherent of the witch, the last remaining vestige of her presence on this earth. He is part of the great lie." "What must I do, Taita? As soon as the Nile began to flow again, Soe disappeared. We do not know what has become of him." "Before anything else, I must capture him and bring him to you. Queen Mintaka is so deeply in his thrall that she believes all he tells her. She would have given you over to him. She will not believe evil of him unless the confession of that evil comes from the mouth of Soe himself." "What do you need from me, Taita?" Nefertiti asked. "You must take Queen Mintaka away. I need to have the freedom of the palace of Memnon on the west bank. Take her to Assuwit to make sacrifice at the temple of Hathor. Tell her that the goddess appeared to you in a vision and demanded this of you both for the sake of your dear babes, Prince Kaba and his little sister Unas, who are now in the underworld." "It is true that I have felt the need to make sacrifice to Hathor. The queen and I will leave by royal barge in 5 days' time, on the night of the new moon. What else do you require of me?" "I need Lord Meron and 100 of your best fighting men. Meron must carry your hawk seal, which gives him your unbridled authority." "He shall have these things,"